I like sports. I could do something in sports.
Uh-huh. In what capacity?
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, yeah, you make good comments.
So what about that?
Well, you know, they tend to give those jobs to ex-players and people that are, you know, in broadcasting.
Living George Costanza's dream, you're tuned into The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Well, that's really not fair.
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look at the 5 and 10. It's glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes that glow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show, Strictly Talks Hockey. Getting ready for the holiday season. Great tune there, as it's our co-host's favorite Christmas carol, Jason Pajak. Want to bring you in to the sounds of one Michael Bublé's It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas.
It is beginning to look a lot like Christmas. It is now snowy, and it's been 1 or 2 degrees the last 2 days, which is really weird. I mean, climate change, but still, it's really odd.
No snow in December for a Grey Cup?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I was driving home a couple nights ago, and I was sitting there realizing, wait, I put my winter tires on for this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the good news is that it's going to get cold again, and it's getting cold, obviously, a little colder today in terms of Thursday's weather, but I mean, for me, it's finally getting into sort of that holiday sort of spirit around the weather anyway, because I mean, it just doesn't feel right if you got a green Christmas, I think. So,
yeah.
So it is feeling a little bit like Christmas, although maybe we should have started off with I'll be home for Christmas, because it's almost going to be that situation again, thanks to all of the problems we're seeing now with the new Omicron variant and COVID-19. Of course, this is going to dominate our chatter today, because
I
was gonna say, this is pretty much the only story right now in hockey that's affecting almost every league and every team that we can imagine. So COVID-19 has now struck a ridiculous number of teams and leagues. Included in that, as we go around sort of this merry-go-round of names here, Craig Smith, Brad Marchand, and Patrice Bergeron, all from the Boston Bruins, are in protocol. So Boston's not sure what they're going to do. They already said they're probably staying in New York after playing the Rangers. So they don't have to worry about crossing the border, because if they cross the border and find more positive tests, those players would have to stay in Canada probably past Christmas. And none of them want to do that because their families are in the States. Mm-hmm. Seth Jarvis is going through that right now, because Seth Jarvis is stuck in Canada while the Carolina Hurricanes are playing back in Carolina. Now, Seth Jarvis is Canadian. He's not going to complain too much, I don't think, because he can go home. He's from Manitoba. Nice, good old Winnipeg kid here in terms of bringing Seth Jarvis home, but not a great situation for Seth Jarvis. Joining him, though, Sebastian Aho is on that list. There's a pile of other players as well. They've had their game against Minnesota on Tuesday was postponed. Obviously, that's not good in terms of how their situation is going. They are going to play against Detroit with a reduced roster. They had 2 players short of a full roster, so they're going to try and push through it. But again, we're talking about guys like Jordan Staal, Andrei Svechnikov, Ian Cole, Steven Lorenz, a pile of guys that they need that are out right now. From there, this is where things start getting a little crazy. Calgary has 27 positive cases.
How you doing, Alberta?
16 players and 11 coaches and staff are currently in COVID protocol. They are legitimately done until after Christmas now. They had their game on Monday against Chicago postponed. They have their game against the Columbus Blue Jackets this weekend postponed. They're done. Like, they're done for a while. 16 players. What are you doing in Calgary?
Yep. I mean, it's it's also Alberta, where on Wednesday, their premier said, cases are rising, it's getting bad, but I'm going to remove all of the restrictions.
Well, since
because we
that,
just shouldn't try anymore.
Right. Well, since Jason Kenney did that from Edmonton, he should also be reminded that Ryan McLeod and coach Dave Tippett are also in COVID protocol right now because the Oilers are also affected. Devin Taves of the Colorado Avalanche, also in the group of COVID people that are currently suffering. So not good there. Vancouver, we turn to our attention to the West Coast. Luke Shen, Juha Lehmikko, they're both in COVID protocol. The New York Islanders' Matthew Barzal is back in COVID protocol. You might recall he was in there earlier this year. Tuesday night, Morgan Frost was pulled from their game against New Jersey after testing positive. And Tucker Poolman was pulled from their game against Columbus after testing positive.
This is a team where a good chunk of the players already got infected with COVID. It was, I saw an interesting tweet where at the time, the new cases in Vancouver were two new players, where most of the guys had been infected last year with the outbreak that they had, and all the players are, with the exception of, I believe, Travis Hamonic, double vaccinated.
This is just getting worse.
There was an interesting thought about how it looks like with this, you know, we're learning about this new variant every single day. We do know that it's the most contagious strain of COVID we've seen so far, but when you are double vaccinated or double vaccinated with the booster and, you know, have been infected with COVID, that seems to be the most effective protection, I guess, against getting infected by this new variant, which was an interesting thing to keep an eye on. But I think it's just going to tear through the Canucks yet again.
Well, it's tearing through other teams as well. Florida announced on Wednesday they have five players in COVID protocol. So
I think two of them are on my fantasy teams.
There you go. I was going to say they're affected as well. And then we get to the other leagues. The ECHL announced that the games between Worcester and Reading that are going to be played in Reading, Pennsylvania, have all been canceled. The three games were supposed to happen on December 17th and 19th, three-game series between Worcester and Reading, all of them have been postponed. So ECHL is affected. The OHL is announcing all sorts of stoppages. The Erie Otters came out on Wednesday and told the media that they have 13 players who tested positive. 13 players from the Erie Otters tested positive.
That is insane.
The whole Pennsylvania area may just be one big contagious area right now.
Yeah.
Owen Sound and Kitchener in the OHL, they postponed their game. Sudbury and Barrie, they postponed their Thursday night game. So more games being postponed in the OHL. As we know, on Tuesday, Province of New Brunswick came out and shut down everything minor hockey related, except for the QMJHL and the Maritime Hockey League. Everything is shut down there now. So not good if you're in New Brunswick. The QMJHL is still trying to decide on what they're going to do. U Sports, in terms of UNB and some of the other teams that are in and around the AUS, they reportedly have not been ruled on because they won't play until January. So they get a little bit of a reprieve, but they still can't practice. They're not allowed to practice. So make of that what you will. The PEI came out on Wednesday and said there'll be no travel in or out of the province for any sports, which means that the QMJHL's Islanders, the Charlottetown Islanders, are no longer going to be able to play their games.
Why are the Maritime provinces getting it right all the time?
St. Effects.
With their restrictions.
St. Effects, who we know is in Nova Scotia. Now, St. Effects announced a freeze on all ticket sales moving forward as the province of Nova Scotia limited sporting events to 60 people again. And then on Wednesday, Ontario came out after they had massive outbreaks over the last week, and they limited sporting events to 50% capacity.
To add to the NHL list, Robbie Fabry and Michael Rasmussen of the Red Wings.
There we go. A few more to add to more. That. So yeah, Red Wings. Beyond that, though, and again, we'll talk about this. We've already seen big outbreaks in the NHL this season already. San Jose and New York Islanders had some ridiculous outbreaks there. So we know that this is definitely possible. We know that this is definitely spreading again, and we know that this is going to be a problem. Why this becomes a bigger problem, though, is that there are other leagues that are affected as well. There are currently, as it stands right now, currently more than 70 players on the NFL's COVID protocol lists. The NBA, saw 7 Brooklyn Nets added to their COVID protocol list on Tuesday, which limited them to 8 players against the Toronto Raptors. Somehow they still won, but that's more on Toronto than it is on Brooklyn. But they had 8 players on the bench and in their lineup. That's ridiculous. Among other NBA teams, the Lakers have 3 positive tests. The Bucks have 3, including Giannis Antetokounmpo. The Bulls have 6, and they've actually had 2 of their games postponed. The Heat have 1, and the Knicks have 2. The Lakers actually canceled practice after one of their positive tests. So NBA is affected as well. And again, some of those NBA teams, some of those NHL teams, they cross over. They play in the same arenas. So this might not be over yet. We have seen legitimate Thomas Bortolo. This was reported early in the week, but Thomas Bortolo is not at the U.S. World Junior camp because he is out with COVID symptoms right now. He is not allowed to attend.
It just keeps getting worse.
He is one of the best. He is one of the best young players in the States, and he is not going to be part of the Team USA World Junior Championship team.
I am also very surprised that the World Junior Championships is still going ahead.
Well, it's in Alberta, though, right? So,
oh yeah, there you go. That's your answer. That's your answer. The Texas of Canada.
So
strikes again.
We look at all of this, and I say this because, again, I mean, I'm not here to rain on anybody's parade. I'm not here to ruin anybody's day. I'm not here to destroy anybody's dreams. But at some point, at some juncture during the season, some league is going to shut down again. They have to, because there's just going to be too many guys that are either sick or unable to play because of symptoms. And right now, the NHL seems to have a big lead on everybody, big head start on everybody in terms of that shutdown.
But you know what's going to happen? The NBA is going to shut down first.
Oh, yeah.
Because they care more about their players than compared to dollars. And the NHL is hurting extremely bad. And they're finally getting back to kind of an area where, with enough revenue, the cap is going to go up by $1 million next year, and the escrow debt is going to start to get paid down by the players. So they are going to do everything possible not to shut the season down and keep fans in buildings, Toronto excluded. So they are probably going to wait until either the situation gets so bad that they can't keep going, or the NBA does it first so they can follow suit.
So here's my question then, because this is, if you're NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, and you're looking at the number of people that have been affected by this over the last week. Remember, this is just the last week. This isn't like the last month or the last, 3 months. This is the last week we've seen all of these people added to the COVID protocol list. If you're looking at this, obviously the Olympics now are, we said unlikely 2 weeks ago. This is
pretty much off the
table. Stop. Yeah, this is full stop at this point. I'm not saying anything bad about the Olympics yet. We'll get to that in a second. But if you're an NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman and you have a 2-week break for the Olympics where your games are going to be stopped, would you not want that to happen? Pull out from the Olympics, give your teams 2 weeks off to get themselves healthy, I'll say, and then come back and finish the season strong. Would that not be a better solution for what could happen? Yeah, it sucks that you're not going to have that exposure over in China. I get that. But too bloody bad, you got to finish this season. And right now, it doesn't look like you're going to be able to.
I mean, we're already at a point where it looks like the best players aren't going. Like Alex Pietrangelo already came out and said he is one of the 3 guys that's already made the Canadian roster. And he came out and said that he doesn't want to go because if he gets sick, he's going to be away from his family for 3 to 5 weeks when he has 4 kids under the age of 3.
Well, Robin Lehner came out and said he will not play for Sweden. That he has no interest in going and representing the country right now. And I don't blame him. I mean, again, COVID is COVID, and you don't really want to take a risk with that in terms of your health. But Lehner came out and he was very adamant about it. He is not going to play for Sweden. I wish Jacob Markstrom the best. He's a great goaltender. Hopefully people in Sweden will get behind him. Well, that's a pretty big loss already for Sweden. Not saying that Lehner was going to start or going to outplay Markstrom and take the starter position or anything like that, but to lose one of the best goalies you have on the planet, that's a big loss for a team like Sweden when they can't turn to a guy like Lundqvist anymore and just expect, oh, well, he's got this. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Like, this was going to be our first shot at seeing what, the Swedish net is going to be like moving forward with no Henrik Lundqvist. Same thing, like, with Finland not having Tuukka Rask there to tend the twine for the Finns. We were going to see who takes that net. So now it's kind of like, all right, we kind of have to just get through this. Like,
but so I mean, if I'm the NHL though, I come out. I mean, start your Christmas break and have a good time. But I come out sometime after the New Year, and again, I know they have to do it by January 10th. But I come out like January 2nd and go, you know what? It's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. Like, let's make the call right now. We just watched the Spengler Cup finish. Great hockey over in Davos. Let those players go.
Yeah, because that has to be the backup plan. Like, it's one of those things where I personally think the NHL has already made up its mind. The NHL does not want to go, but it was part of the CBA negotiations to have the players go to the Olympics. So the ball is in the PA's court for the players to decide if they want to risk it. And we're already seeing guys dropping off. I honestly think it's a foregone conclusion that there's going to be no NHLers, or there's going to be very few NHLers at the Olympics this year. And we just have to get ready to deal with that fact.
I mean, I'm not against
it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it from a health angle. It's not worth it from an economic angle. It's not worth it from, you know, a personal angle for these players who might potentially... We're seeing how fast the Omicron variant is spreading, and just COVID in general is continuing to spread very quickly. We're in a different spot now from what the Summer Olympics was with the Winter Olympics, with these team sports where the risk is too high. You're going to have guys that either are false positive, because we already know if you've had COVID in the past, you can still test positive, quote unquote, because I believe it's the antibodies that show up on the test. It can still show up that you're sick and transmittable, and that's just a false positive.
Yeah.
But with the Chinese government and how serious they're taking this, and I don't give credit to the Chinese government for a lot of things, but being that serious about the quarantines, that means they're taking this seriously. Even okay, if it's so, a false positive, you have to stay quarantined, right. And that's just too much of a risk.
So here's the thing, though, is that if you're the NHL and you're looking at this and you're going, okay, they're very serious about this. Like, the Chinese government and the IOC have said there will be no exceptions to the rule for this. If there is a positive or a false positive, mm-hmm. you are staying for 3 weeks minimum.
Yeah.
How many NHLers, how many teams can afford to have a Connor McDavid or an Austin Matthews or a Sidney Crosby, or, I mean, hey, just throw a name out there just for fun. You know, Leon Draisaitl. Let's talk about, you know, a couple of those guys. An Elias Pettersson, for example. How many teams can absorb the loss of a superstar for more than 2 weeks, let alone, I mean, they're not playing at that point, but let alone 2 weeks in their schedule, only to have them come back and possibly not be the same player that they were when they left, because they're fatigued. They have COVID, you know, some sort of COVID, you know, sort of overlap of, mm-hmm. of some of the problems that we've seen with some of the other players who come back, where they say it takes months to start feeling like themselves again. Like, I look at this and I go, the risks are just way too high for the NHL. Let's come out right now. Let's step to the forefront here now, and let's mm-hmm. tell everybody, we're not doing this. We're not going to have this anymore, because the risk is just too high.
I mean, I'm trying to do the math here. So the IOC has, I believe it's $5 million set aside. That's their insurance policy for players.
Yeah.
For if they get sick and they have to quarantine, and it's the injury protection. So it's for the lost wages. If I just do the math really quick, you roughly have, so NHL contracts are not paid out on a 365-day schedule. It's paid out from the day you start play to the day you end play, and that's roughly 200 days. So your contract each year is paid out over 200 days. That's the only time you get your paycheck. So Connor McDavid, in that 200 days, makes $6,250 a day. Okay? That shakes out to $43,000 a week. If he's gone for the maximum of 5 weeks, that is over $200,000 of that $5 million already gone.
Again, I get that the IOC has got this sort of idea to set up to sort of save everybody from coming over there and do it. My answer to the IOC would be, don't bother. Like, we're not coming. Like, we've seen this now just decimate teams. And again, I get that, you know, guys got to get tested before they get on the plane. Guys got to get tested after they get off the plane. That's not going to be the problem.
It's when you're there.
Right. The problem is what are you doing while you're there? Because obviously we've seen guys get on the planes here in North America, get off the planes and they've shown no symptoms. Then they go into a rink and all of a sudden symptoms start showing up again when they start doing testing. And you go, what did you do between the time, who did you run into at the airport that you maybe should probably report to their superiors? Where did you guys go after you landed? Who did you talk to? Like, there are so many variables, and especially in China, where you're going to a country where you don't speak their language, you're going to need a guide. There is a good chance that something bad is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And you still have to get on a plane to get there.
Right.
Which is a closed environment that is not ventilated. And we know that COVID spreads in unventilated environments. And we know, like, I understand that the tournaments, like specifically the hockey tournaments for men and women, are going to be a bubble environment where you're with your team, you're only with your team, basically the same kind of parameters that existed last year in the NHL and the playoff bubble before that. But we still saw players get sick and get infected within those bubbles. And with how quickly those can spread, specifically when you're on the ice with other players, it's still like the cracks are starting to show. Like, I will give the NHL credit. Last year, on the whole, worked out pretty well. There were some hiccups along the way. There were some issues, but they got the season done and reasonably well. The Vancouver Canucks, specifically, an aberration.
No, they didn't get it done well. That entire Southeast division, that Carolina, Florida, Tampa, all of those teams in that corner, all had games postponed. Like, they went through and they got it done. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they didn't. I mean, but we're talking about 56 games. We're not talking about 9 games in 14 days now.
But what I'm saying is, like, the environment that you're going to be in is completely different. And the ways that it can go wrong are even more numerous.
Oh, yeah.
With
I agree.
This new variant, the number of people involved, going to a foreign country, being around God knows how many other players. And you know what? I know that they're professional athletes. I know that the Olympics is a serious thing. You might get one shot at being at the Olympics. You best believe players are going to leave their hotel. They are going to break quarantine. They are going to do something stupid because they're human beings. It's going to happen. And it's going to get them stuck in China for 3 to 5 weeks.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that this is now bigger than just... It's bigger than just one player or two players. We're talking about affecting other teams. And that's where I just go, come on.
Like, do you seriously think a player with the mentality of Connor McDavid is going to say, I'm going to put my team's season at risk to go play for Canada?
Okay, so here's the other thing, though. And I want to bring this up because I know, I mean, I respect where you're going with this, but I think that we need to look at this from a more global picture. I'll point out the fact that we have players coming from countries where vaccinations are not mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
I'll point out that prior to the KHL season starting this year, Avangard Omsk, who won the Gagarin Cup last year, they pulled out of a preseason tournament because they had 20 positive tests for the coronavirus. 20. That's their entire team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is not a country out there. And again, there are countries that are respecting this. Again, we talk about, you know, all the different stuff. September 23rd, 2020, there were 87 confirmed positive cases in the KHL. That day, not that week, not that day. KHL said they weren't even going to consider halting competition. You play on, play through it. Go.
It's what? Russia. Just do it.
What? Beyond that, you have all the officials that are going to be coming in. We had referee Brian Pokmara. He was held out of the Rangers-Colorado game on Tuesday because, again, he was awaiting the results of a COVID-19 test. They played 3 officials in the first period. But again, this is stuff that we look at and we go, all right, there are going to be officials coming in from other countries as well. They're going to have to follow the same protocols. They're going to have to be vaccinated. And I'll say this only because we know that there are people out there that aren't vaccinated. But how many good referees are going to be told to stay home because it's not mandatory to get vaccinated in some of these countries? Again, I get people have a right to choose. We'll talk about that in a second as well. But like, you have to be, if you're coming over, at the very least, because of how fast and how good this Omicron variant is at spreading.
I thought that you needed to be fully vaccinated to take part in the Olympics.
So you do. But again, there are countries that are going to have to leave officials and coaches and whatever at home because they aren't vaccinated. And that's what I'm saying, though, is that, again, we've seen Antonio Brown. We've seen Evander Kane. We've seen guys come in with fake vaccination information. It's not like Russia hasn't, you know, done doping for widespread, you know, people at Olympics. We've seen guys come in with fake vaccination information. And away we go after that. And that's the thing, is I look at this and I go, the chances of this becoming a bigger problem, because what happens if you find out that a player isn't vaccinated? Do you send him home?
Well, you make him quarantine for 3 to 5 weeks and then send him home.
Okay, so what do you do about the wins, though, after that? Because if, say, it's Russia that has two or three guys that are unvaccinated, do you take away their wins? Because they're required to be vaccinated, and they're not. They lied.
Treat it like doping. Yeah, you lose it. You lose the medal. You lose the wins. You lose whatever.
So again, this is what I look,
the rules.
Right. So this is what I look at, and I go, and we know the IOC doesn't have any teeth when it comes to doing any of that stuff. They just slap everybody on the wrist and say, "Don't do that again. Please don't do that again.
At least don't get caught."
Yeah. If you could just be a little more, you know, quiet about it next time. Just do it a little more discreetly. I look at this and I just go, this is all the ramifications of being just an out of control Olympics. I know that China has got everything locked down very well when it comes to within their borders. It's what's coming from outside their borders that they should be most afraid of.
Yes. Like, it's just at this point, I didn't care about the Olympics leading into this year. I care even less now. Why are we doing this?
I'm with you.
Why are we putting on this charade that this is going to be something good for everybody? I know people are like, oh, don't be doom and gloom, but like, this is serious.
This is like, very serious.
Why? Now. You're going to the potential to crash and burn is significantly high. Why are we taking that chance?
One agent told Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts this week that he thought that this COVID explosion, this entire blow up of all the COVID case we're seeing right now would be the perfect time to back out of the Olympics. Obviously, the NHLPA feels a little bit different. They're apparently going to have a discussion. But from what they've told Elliot, according to multiple sources, potential Olympians were told the risk is this. Once they get on the flight to Beijing, they lose control of their personal destiny should they receive a positive COVID test, meaning that they're on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Again, according to the Athletes Playbook released this week, if you have a confirmed positive test, you will not be allowed to compete or continue in your role. If you are symptomatic, you'll be asked to stay at the designated hospital for a treatment. If you're asymptomatic, you will be asked to stay in an isolation facility. At a hospital, you will be discharged when your body returns to normal for 3 consecutive days. Respiratory symptoms improve significantly. Lung imaging shows significant improvement. You have 2 negative PCR test results with a sample interval of at least 24 hours, and you display no other COVID-19 symptoms. In other words, you're not getting out of there for a while. The isolation facility is even worse. You'll be tested every day beginning 24 hours after your last test. You'll be discharged once you have 2 consecutive negative PCR test results with at least 24 hours between the 2 samples and no other COVID-19 symptoms. It doesn't say anything specifically about a 3 to 5 week quarantine, but we know that it's at least 10 days before we see symptoms starting to go away. That's 2 weeks.
And then you have to wait until those symptoms are gone. Which can be, speaking because I know people who have gone through this, it can take significantly longer.
Well, and let's be honest with this. This isn't a rule enforced by the IOC or by the NHL. This is Chinese law. This is what you're doing. China can change these rules at any point that they want as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Connor McDavid said he was nervous this week. And then you mentioned Pietrangelo about being, you know, a little nervous in terms of that. At the end of the day, let's just make it easy on everybody and say we're not going.
Yeah. It's almost like we're going on just pretending it's going to be okay and pretending it's going to happen and Canada's going to win gold against the USA in overtime again. And we're going to have this amazing story watching Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon with gold medals draped around their necks and we'll be great. It's not. We're going to be lucky if we see any of those guys going to the tournament to begin with. Because, like, you know what? I'm a nobody. If Hockey Canada came and knocked on my door and said, will you play for Canada? I'd tell them no. I do not feel comfortable being in a foreign country, having a health crisis, or potentially having a health crisis, and being in the hands of a foreign government.
speaking of health crises, there might be a few people that come out, come away with PTSD because the Chinese men's hockey team is now approved to play in that Olympic tournament as well. So IIHF finally came down with a ruling last week, and they said, yep, Chinese men are totally okay to get in there. We're happy with the names they've added to the list. Let's go full bore, get in there and play. So congratulations to Canada, the U.S. and Germany on their double digit wins, because we can pretty much guarantee that at this point.
So let's strangely enough, the entire global supply of red lights just tanked because they are lined up behind the goals in China right now. Ready
again. We said again 2 weeks ago that they're already in, that we're even debating this isn't a good idea because we already know they're going to be in. But the fact that they played this out and made this a lot longer than it had to be just goes to show that the IIHF has no clue on what they're doing when it comes to international hockey. Like, they are the worst caretakers of hockey in the history of the game.
Yeah.
I hate the NHL's business first, sport second attitude, but at least the IIHF isn't putting the business ahead. But at this point, they're putting politics ahead of the sport at this point. So I don't tell me that you're any better or any worse. You're just as crooked as everybody else, IIHF. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a foregone conclusion the first time it was brought up. Like, no matter what the team is going, and it's going to be what China wants it to be, no matter what, because it's China.
Right. And hey, whatever. I mean, I don't care if China plays. Again, I made this clear 2 weeks ago. I don't care if they play. Just don't complain about the scores and don't complain about the lack of competition. Mm-hmm. Because this is exactly, they're getting what they wanted, and the IIHF is delivering what they wanted. So,
I mean, they're going to complain.
C'est la vie, to use an international expression. C'est la vie. And that's exactly what it's going to be for China. Que sera, sera. What will be, because this is going to be ugly for the Chinese men's hockey team.
Yeah. I mean, it was always going to be that, because China is just not even close to the level of the other countries that are going, but this is going to be bad. It's going to be, their best hope is that everyone down to like junior C players in Canada and high school hockey players in the US decide, you know what? We don't want to go.
I don't think there'll be that many people that say no to going to the Olympics. So they may be in for a little bit of a beatdown.
You never know.
Speaking of beatdowns, one guy that's taking it hard right now on social media is John Tortorella. And you probably know why. As Tortorella came out and was preaching the good old boys game on ESPN the other day, following the amazing goal scored by Trevor Zegras and Sonny Milano. Torts came out and said he wasn't trying to be the bad guy, that, you know, had this happened, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, that somebody would have beat the living snot out of those two kids. I'm not saying that Tortorella is wrong. He's not. He's exactly right. He's 100% accurate on that. The only problem is that he's talking like it's still 2001. Like, there is no way that a guy like Darian Hatcher, like a guy like, again, a Richard Matvichuk, a guy like, again, they can skate, they can play, they could play at that speed. Those guys now would get walked around by some of these young kids now, including Zegras and Milano. Torts is right, though. In 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, yeah, there were some big dudes in the NHL that would have taken your head off. Mm-hmm. But it's 2021, and John Tortorella needs to change with the times, just as the game has evolved over that time.
And you can see him. Well, he acknowledges that he's wrong. He acknowledges that nobody's going to agree with him while he's talking. And you see, while he's like, because he obviously gets asked to defend his argument.
Yep.
And you see him slowly, like in very un-John Tortorella fashion, just like shrinks in on himself because he realizes he's wrong. And then Ray Ferraro talks and he realizes, yeah, I'm wrong. Because like that Zegras goal has been shared thousands of times on Twitter alone. Like, it wound up, it was hockey was being talked about on Good Morning America.
It is because of that goal. 50 million views already, that clip, the video clip. 50 million.
Yeah. They were it was being talked about on one of the biggest morning shows in the world, being shown in front of children and moms and dads and just random people across the U.S. in all the markets you want to grow the game. And here's John Tortorella saying it's bad. It's bad for the game.
The thing that got me, and again, I watched it and I posted about it almost immediately that night on Hockey Blog in Canada, because I was blown away by the amount of skill shown by both Zegras and by Milano. But the fact, and again, I know it's the Buffalo Sabres, and I don't want to make light of the fact the Jets lost to them on Tuesday night, but that c'est la vie. The Sabres kind of just stood there and watched, which, okay, is fine. Like, I mean, if you're trying to defend your the front of your net, that passive box they were playing, that's how you defend it. I get that. But the fact that Milano recognized that, hey, they're like, these guys aren't doing anything. These guys aren't even going to try. And then yelled out Michigan as he's going to the net. And Zegras heard him, and Zegras did the Michigan, threw it out front over top of the net to Milano, who bunted it into the net. The fact that those two have that amount of skill and have the belief and the faith in their skills to be able to do that at game speed in the middle of an NHL game. I mean, it was early in the game. Granted, it was the 1-0 goal. But the fact that they have the belief and the faith in their skills to be able to do that, pull that out of their arsenal at any time, is why we should be legitimately celebrating that highlight day in and day out for the next couple of years. Because that right there is why this game gets better and better, because it's just a pure skill play.
Yeah. And I mean, not to rain on John Tortorella's memory of the early 2000s, because, you know, that's when I started playing hockey and, you know, I have great memories of the early 2000s of hockey. There was a guy that had the skill to be able to do things like that and just did absolutely ridiculous things every time he stepped on the ice. And oh, wouldn't you know it, his prime was the early 2000s, a little guy by the name of Pavel Datsyuk, who just embarrassed players night in and night out. Did anybody take his hat off? No, they didn't.
I think the other thing, though, is that he talked about how, you know, is it good for the game? Like, that was the one thing that he wanted to talk about more than anything. Is it good for the game? And my answer to that is, if you're viewing it as anything but, you're on the wrong side of history here. And I'll say that because we look at moments in history where the game changed, where one player specifically changed the way that everybody else had to play the game. And I'm not saying that Zegras and Milano have changed the game significantly enough at that point. But when you look at a guy like Bobby Orr, who changed the way that defensemen were viewed in the NHL, he instead of just being the 6'3", 6'4", you know, stay at home defenders, he was the 5'10" rush the puck for 190 points a season, changed the entire way, which then brought us players like Ray Bourque, players like Paul Coffey, like these great offensive defenders. That's because Bobby Orr changed the way the game was played. And I look at that and I go, all right, that's a game-changing moment. Would John Tortorella have come out in the 70s and gone, this kid is ruining the game? Like, we need to think about whether or not this is good for the game, what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like, what? No.
I mean, yeah, he probably would have. Well, that's the thing. He said, he acknowledged, like, yeah, it's probably bringing people into the sport, but it's also losing people. I'm like, I'm sorry, I have not seen a single person other than you complain about this goal. Like, if we gain 100,000 fans and lose 1,000, we're still up 90,000 fans.
I will say right now that if we gain 10 fans and lost 100, we have 10 better fans than 100 terrible fans.
Yes, because we have fans that want to push the game forward.
And I'm not saying that to be negative. Don't get me wrong. I know we talked about this a little bit earlier. I have loved, I'm not a big Trouba fan by any means, but Jacob Trouba has been going old school with his hits all week long. Some of them have been a little borderline. We discussed that a little bit. But at the end of the day, shoulder to chest, and he is throwing some vicious hits out there. Scott Stevens style hits out there where guys are being stopped dead in their tracks and waking up on their backs. Those kinds of hits. And again, I'm not here to talk about the violence of the game. Those kinds of hits are still quote unquote tough hockey that John Tortorella is talking about. The fact that everything's moving faster though, makes the chances of getting one of those hits in a game that much lower, because again, everybody's moving faster.
It makes it more special,
right? It's like watching, you know, a ball bounce around. If the ball is bouncing extremely fast, throwing another ball to hit it is going to be virtually impossible. But when you look at the way that this game is being played by the young kids now, the Troubas, the Milanos, the McDavids, the Austin Matthews, the Nikolai Ehlers, these guys who have ridiculous speed, a pile of toughness, and a world-class set of skills. You can't say this game is worse now for a skillful play like Zegras and Milano pulled off than what it was 20 years ago when Darian Hatcher would simply take your head off.
Yeah. I mean, I played hockey in that era. The hockey now is way better. Way, way better than what it used to be. I can't remember what podcast it was, but the discussion was like, when Sonny Milano was drafted, he was on social media, like showing off stick tricks and posting videos of his skills. And he's from that like Pavel Barber generation, the Nasher generation, where it's like all of these crazy tricks and deke moves. And these, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I learned everything I could about playing hockey through watching highlights and watching games and the Hockey Canada videos that my parents would buy us. Now these kids, they're logging on to like Twitter and TikTok and YouTube and watching these insane highlights. And they're like, I could do that. And they're going out and they're doing it. So they're just getting exponentially better because they're learning from each other and they're building a community around this stuff and sharing all of this information, sharing all of these tricks and tips. And it's just making the players so much better.
Well, I called it a street hockey goal because legitimately it's the only place I'd be able to do it. Like legitimately, yeah. I need the big, you know, banana curve on my stick to be able to pick the puck up like that. But I mean, I look at this and I go, I mean, this is something that we would have goofed around trying to do, you know, playing shinny on a Sunday afternoon at the outdoor rink, right? Like you don't work on this and practice enough to get good at it because you'd get yelled at by your coach 20 years ago or 30 years ago, whatever it was. What are you doing, you idiot? Like do the drill and stop jerking around, like just get it done. But you look at these guys now and they have enough skill. They've worked on enough stuff. They're sticking around after practice or they're going in on their own or they're just goofing around in the locker room trying to pick up pucks with their sticks. And they're turning that into actual skill on the ice. Don't get me wrong. If that was me on the ice and I was the Buffalo Sabres defense, I probably would have stood there and watched too because I would have been like, I can't do that. Like, I can't do that. I just want to watch this because it's so good.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the fact that these guys can do this kind of, have this kind of skill, the fact that Svechnikov can come down and in full flight, lacrosse style a goal out of nowhere, the fact that we get guys like McDavid, you know, stick handling through six guys and putting the puck into the net, the fact that these guys have this amount of skill, we should stop ripping on them and start embracing the fact that they're making the game that much more entertaining. Well, I don't care if John Tortorella doesn't like it. John Tortorella doesn't have to like it. He's a coach. He's probably, and again, he even mentioned this. What would you think of, you know, if you were the guys on the other team? Well, I'd probably applaud the guy, number one. And then number two, I'd probably be like, don't do that again.
Yeah. But I would be embarrassed and I would try and it would light a fire under my butt and I'd want to go beat them.
Right. The next thing you want to do is go down and try and score a beauty goal as well to try and erase that highlight reel goal.
It's literally whiteboard material. So it drives you to want to beat them even harder. And John Tortorella describing the old game as this tough and honest game and this hard game. Like, looks at hockey today and thinks it's easy?
I'll point this out. If he thinks that it's a tough and honest game that what in terms of what it was 20 years ago, I'll point to Claude Lemieux. When Claude Lemieux is taking a run at Chris Draper and destroying his face because it's tough hockey, quote unquote, it's tough hockey.
Like when Claude Lemieux is biting Keith Tkachuk's hand.
Again, more ridiculousness. When we got guys that are out there strictly just to fight, they have no skill other than just dropping the gloves and throwing fists. Mm-hmm. It's not a tougher era of hockey. It's a different era of hockey. We need to start understanding that there are different eras in hockey. The hockey that was played back when Guy Lafleur played was not the same hockey as the hockey that Wayne Gretzky played. The hockey that Wayne Gretzky played was not the same hockey as, say, a Mario Lemieux played. Yeah, they crossed over. Don't get me wrong. There was some crossover there. But the way that these guys were playing the game and the way that they were attacked, I'll say, in terms of you didn't touch Gretzky, you were gonna have 10 Oilers on you. They all knew that. Mm-hmm. They all knew that Gretzky was filling their mouths with food because he was the guy bringing home the paychecks.
Yeah.
Lemieux didn't have that. Lemieux had to go out there and basically be a 6'3", you know, statue out there and not, and just take whacks all night because he didn't have anybody protecting them.
Same with Jaromir Jagr.
Right. You go down the lineup, you go Jagr changed the game a little bit as well with the way that he brought over a lot of those European moves, like things that the dangles that he used to have were just ridiculous. You see the Datsyuks who brings it over from Russia where he makes those ridiculous, you know, shootout goals. And you go, how on earth? And then Merrick Malik, you mentioned this earlier too when we were talking about it, Merrick Malik between the legs of all the guys in the NHL, Merrick Malik, 6'8" Merrick Malik goes between the legs in a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
And do people go, man, that sucked. That ruined the game right there. No, people are astounded that he could do something like that.
Specifically, how could Merrick Malik do that?
But that's the thing, though. You look at this and you go, obviously, he's worked on this in practice. He's pretty good at it. And oh my God, it worked in a game.
Yeah.
Like again, if Zegras and Milano had, if Milano had missed that bunt and it had gone into the slot and nobody was there to pick it up, no big deal. People would still go, okay, that was pretty good attempt at it. I mean, it's not going to be on every highlight reel, but pretty good attempt or whatever. The fact that he scored, though, is what makes it so good, is because Zegras was the guy who got it in the air and Milano finished it. And I just go, we need to stop, because at the end of the day, hockey is still about scoring more goals than your opponents. We need to stop trying to stifle creativity when it comes to scoring goals. Simple as that.
Well, the number of times Sidney Crosby has batted pucks out of the air and into the net.
Right, yeah.
Do you see John Tortorella complaining about Sidney Crosby doing it? No.
But that's the thing, though, is that we need to really temper our anger at Torts, because Torts admitted he was probably on the wrong side of history, and he still is, which is fun. Mm-hmm. We need to temper our anger at Torts because he legitimately just needs a new calendar. He's in the wrong era. He's in the wrong year. Mm-hmm. If he had a 2021 calendar, we wouldn't even be talking about this because he'd be basically in the current NHL. He's not in the current NHL. And I don't want to say that's why he's not coaching, but hey, let Line A score. That's what he does. And he didn't do a lot of that underneath Torts when he was in Columbus.
Yeah.
So John Tortorella has a point, but it's way off base. And
yeah.
We as viewers need to take a step back on social media, on wherever, whatever platform we have, where we start firing at Tortorella for the win. Mm-hmm. Oh, this guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. This is why he's not coaching anymore. We need to take a step back and just go, he was right, except he's right, but it's not 2001 anymore. It's 2021. Mm-hmm. He's 20 years behind where we are right now. Tortorella is welcome to his opinion. He makes for good TV, I think, in terms of some of his opinions. But on this one, he's a little bit off, and that's all. Let's take it down a notch. And again, stop stifling creativity when it comes to scoring goals. That's all I ask.
Yes. We just want this game to get better, man.
I would prefer to see more creativity, more fun. Again, nobody goes home during 3-on-3 hockey because it's tough hockey. They stick around because it's creative and guys are going in on 2-on-1s and breakaways. And like, there's a reason why people love 3-on-3 hockey when it gets to that point, and they hate the shootout because the shootout is just boring hockey.
The shootout ruins the fun.
Yes, exactly. And that's the problem. Again, I won't deny that we should go back to ties, but at the same time though, if you can't settle in an overtime after a highly, highly entertaining overtime, then both teams deserve points out of that. So quick note before we move to the last story here, there were no appeals on Calgary's arena development permit. Ground may break on the new facility in January. We were talking about this a little bit because it kind of delves into another problem in that the remediation on this arena is going to cost a lot of money, between 85 and 103 million Canadian dollars, which again is about 68 million to $83 million in US funds. Also comes down to the same problem that they may face in Tempe, Arizona for the new Arizona Coyotes arena. Mm-hmm. This is going to cost a lot more than the $70 million that the city of Tempe has set aside for some of this redevelopment of the area. I don't know what it's going to cost because, again, they haven't gone through it yet, but there's apparently a ton of problems in terms of what's underneath the ground there. So not good.
I mean, so first off, in Arizona, you are building something in the middle of a desert.
Right, yeah.
Which in and of itself has issues. With Arizona, there's also the problem, specifically with Tempe, is there's waste material
right
under the ground that they have to deal with. Because that stuff just, contrary to popular belief, when you dig a hole and there's stuff down there, that stuff doesn't just go away. It has to be put somewhere. And that costs money.
Well, and I mean, the remediation in terms of the cost for this is that there are a couple of key problems, and you mentioned one of them, that it has to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. But the biggest problem that they seem to have is that there are landfill materials 16 to 37 feet below the surface in Tempe. So there is stuff down there that's currently decaying, currently decomposing, doing all that kind of stuff. The issue is that if you start digging into that, and again, this is one of the problems they talk about in terms of, you know, where you dig and how you dig. If you start digging into that and it releases methane, which is highly flammable.
Yes.
You're talking about a potential monstrous explosion, depending on how much methane is actually down there. And releasing that into the environment is going to cause a massive problem as well, because as we know, methane is highly
toxic
for climate change. Yeah.
Yes. Methane is one of the largest greenhouse gases that is currently turning our planet into a furnace.
Tim Kellison, a professor at Georgia State University, told Cronkite News that overruns for this budget are going to be inevitable.
Yeah.
Calgary right now has budgeted, and we know this because Calgary has budgeted a set amount of money. Calgary, the city of Calgary, has said there will be no additional funds given to Calgary Next, or whatever the group is going to be calling themselves, that they're going to have to pay for it themselves. These cost overruns could cost millions of dollars more than where they currently sit.
And if the budget goes over and it's not the taxpayers footing the bill, good.
I
giving billionaires money to build arenas.
Agreed. I am 100%, 110% in favor of making them pay for all of the remediation, not just whatever fair share they think they should pay. You pay for all. You wanted to build here? You're responsible for it. I get that the city may have some interest in this. I know the city is going to take over this arena after 35 years in Calgary. That's going to be their arena for them to use for whatever reason, whatever purposes they want. Like, that's how they structured the deal. But in saying that, I don't agree, and I certainly don't want to see additional cuts, additional services reduced to pay for other things that are going on with these arenas. And if remediation triples in value, say it's at 100 million, say that number comes in at 100. If it goes up to 300 million, boo hoo, billionaire owner. Boo,
yeah,
bloody who. Because that's your choice, that you demanded to have a new arena. You demanded to have this brand new facility built there. It would be the same as if I bought a house. I'd have to do the remediation costs on my own. I couldn't go to the bank and go, listen, do you think we could split the costs on this? Bank doesn't care. They'd be like, no, hit the road.
Oh, but you know what's going to happen. The remediation cost is going to go up, and they're going to come back to the city of Calgary, to the province of Alberta, with their hat in their hands.
Oh, just sure, like, yeah.
Well, could you please, you know, spot us a few more $1 million of taxpayer money so we can cover these costs? And knowing Alberta, they're going to do it.
It's just one of those things, again, where I just go, enough. Like, enough. You got enough billionaire friends that could help you out and buy, you know, a share in the stadium if you want, or whatever. We should not be putting up a dime of public money for stadiums at any point anymore, unless the city owns unless it's the Green Bay Packers, essentially. If the city owns the team, then you kind of have to. But if it's a billionaire owner that owns the team, then the billionaire has to pay for any of the costs that he wants to assign to that team. And that includes new arenas. Billionaires are billionaires for a reason, and I get that. But if you're going to buy expensive toys, you're going to pay the expensive maintenance on them as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just look at this and I go, enough of this crap of paying for, remediation is one thing, but Calgary better not pay for anything else on that. Let's finish off with just a fun, quick hit here. Jim Rutherford, Bruce Boudreaux in Vancouver. I'm not sure about Rutherford, but it seems like Bruce Boudreaux might be the right guy for the right job there.
Yes. I think if you're going to take anything away from the situation, the Aquilinis are batting 50%, hiring Bruce Boudreaux and Jim Rutherford. Jim Rutherford should stop being involved in hockey, but I have so much time for Bruce Boudreaux. He's just a great person. And you know, like, you just tell that any team he coaches, the guys love him.
And I mean, he wins everywhere he goes. Like, that's the thing. It's not like they hired a guy who's been fired 100 times because he hasn't got results. Bruce Boudreaux might be the right guy at the right time for the Vancouver Canucks, and he should be there for a while as long as the guys continue to respond to him.
A major issue that the Canucks were facing basically since they went on that miracle run in the playoffs was that Besser and Pettersson and Quinn Hughes were not performing up to the caliber that they should. And they were stuck, and they just, it was confidence or deployment or systems, whatever, it was not working for them. And that's the perfect injection for the Canucks to have Bruce Boudreau in there. And I think of the right before Travis Green was fired, the quote from JT Miller during Canucks practice, where he yells, "We don't know what the bleep we're doing," during a drill, but after Travis Green failed to explain it properly.
Yeah. Maybe that's all it takes. I'm not saying that Vancouver's going to make the playoffs. I'm not saying that they're going to rise from the ashes and do miraculous things. But the results they've gotten the last five games have been completely a 180 from where they were under Travis Green.
Mm-hmm. Right before Mike Babcock got fired by the Leafs, there was the quote that with Mike, players are scared to make a mistake. And with Rod Brind'Amour, players are scared to disappoint him.
I also think that guys were a little bit scared of Rod because he could probably tear them in half. Like, that dude is still ripped. So,
yeah.
But in saying that, I'm glad that Boudreau came in. I'm glad he's finding success right off the bat, because again, I always thought he was a good coach. I just thought he was always in bad situations when he got fired, because whether it be guys that had tuned him out or management that had given him crappy options in terms of players to play or anything like that, it didn't seem to work out in some of these situations. But at the end of the day, he always finds a way to win. Mm-hmm.
He's one of those 40 recycled coaches, but he's one of the ones where I never understand why he doesn't have a job when he's not coaching someone.
Right, exactly. And the fact that he does now is a good thing to see, so happy about that. We're gonna get out of here. We're just about out of time here, Jay. Anything you want to say before we get out of here?
Nothing really. Let's talk about is taking a break until the new year. So thank you everyone for listening this year.
Yeah,
and have a safe and happy holidays.
There you go. Safe and happy holidays are always important. Next week, big show for us. We finally get a chance to sit down with three of the Bison's rookies to do a rookie show. So we were going to do that next week, and we're going to bring that to you on the 23rd, I believe it is. So everybody can have a quick laugh and get to meet the Bison's a little bit before Christmas as our Christmas gift to our listeners. So we'll have three of the better players in the league actually on at that point, as these young ladies are doing miraculous things on the ice and certainly putting that skill to good use. So looking forward to that already. Going to have that ready to go for next week. With that, folks, we're out of here for another week. Stay tuned for Skippy on Free Range Radio here on 101.5 UMFM. Always a good show with him. With that, the hockey show is done for tonight. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next Thursday.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store. But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. Sure, it's Christmas once more.
I was in Toronto and I was going to Winnipeg, and it was my first show there, and everyone in Toronto was like, "Oh, bring a coat." Winnipeg. Hope you like cold weather.
Transmitting live from frigid Winnipeg, this is 101.5 UMFM.
I'm not sleeping outside. Then I got to Winnipeg and I was like, oh, they're right. They're right. They nailed it.